Hi, and welcome to the first Wardens of the Midwest podcast. I'm Mickey.
I'm Joe.
I'm Danny.
And I'm Mike.
And we'll be talking about all things Thrones here. Since this is our first podcast, it's going to be rather, I would say, a little shorter than our other podcasts. But, I mean, we'll talk about some of the things that we've deemed most important for the first one. A little bit about ourselves, actually. I've been playing 1.0 for, would say, what, Mike, 9 years now?
Probably something like that. 7 or 8, maybe.
Yeah, Jesus. 9 years. Yeah, I'm an old-time Magic player, L5R. You name it. What got me into Thrones, essentially, was I love the universe that Martin has created, and the theme of the game is what really drew me towards it. Joe, go ahead.
So, this is Joe. A lot of people might know me as Joe from Cincinnati. I kind of have a little bit of a presence in the community already, but I am not a 1.0 veteran. I saw it when I was, you know, several years ago. I saw the game, and I was like, oh, that looks really interesting. Then I saw the card pool, and I was like, oh, yeah, I'm not going to get into this. So when 2.0 came around, that seemed like a perfect chance to get into a game that is based on a book series and a TV series that I really enjoy. So that's why 2.0, you know, I've been pretty involved in the community trying to talk about how much I love Night's Watch.
Yeah, our own veteran superstar here, Joe from Cincinnati.
I'm Danny, and I have some experience with 1.0. Just, I bought the starter set, and I liked it. I said, maybe I could get more cards for it. I had no exposure to LCGs before this. And as soon as I realized it had been going for like 8 years, I was like, no, not anymore. But I've started getting into LCGs. I played Netrunner for a while. I played a couple other card games. And when 2.0 came out, I liked 1.0. I figured I'd like 2.0, and I think it's rang true so far.
This is Mike. I've been playing with Mickey the entire time, so, you know, 7, 8, or 9 years. What really got me into it, I think, other than the fact that I love the universe, is the fact that it was an LCG and not a CCG.
Well, it started as a CCG, right?
It started as a CCG, but that was many years ago.
Oh, really? I have no idea what the timeline
is. Pre-1.0, it was a CCG.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I actually had some of the CCG cards, but I actually never played it as a game. I just thought, oh, look, these are cards that do things.
Well, I kind of got out of the CCG fad when I played L5R, and, you know, you'd buy, like, for example, there'd be a card set that you need to have to be successful, and
of
it'd
course.
Be $20 for each card. So you had to buy three of them at $20 off of eBay, and then a year later, they'd be not legal anymore. And I was just like, I'm kind of done with this whole buying cards that are rare and they're just super expensive, or you're just not going to be competitive.
Was Game of Thrones 1.0 the first LCG in that format? Or there was Call of Cthulhu.
It was definitely not the first.
Okay, what else was there?
Actually,
Warhammer. There was
either
Warhammer.
Yeah, it was either Warhammer Invasion. I think Call of Cthulhu is the only other really old LCG they
yeah.
have going. It might have been the first. Now that I think about it,
well, Call of Cthulhu was just canceled, right? I mean, they just shut that down.
Yeah, that game's been dead for a while, which is unfortunate.
Oh, yeah.
It was actually a really good game. I enjoyed it.
The little bit of it I played, I did enjoy. Warhammer has been around for quite a while, too.
All right.
Yeah, so I guess they got it right now, finally, after how many iterations of the LCG format. We finally find ourselves in Game of Thrones 2.0, which I personally think they did a great job with it. Admittedly, when they made the announcement towards the last year of 1.0, I completely stopped playing 1.0. Now, I didn't play it because, oh, you know, I'm done with this game or anything like that. I was looking forward to how they would reboot the game.
Well, there's also a certain thing. I'm sure there's a certain feeling about, you know, being on a sinking ship. I don't know if that's really a great feeling, like, oh, I'm playing this game and I'm putting all this time into it, and it's going to be canceled and not supported in the next year.
Yeah, for me it was like, why would I spend money on the chapter packs if I'm not going to use them anymore?
Yeah, I mean,
I kept playing it just because I really, really liked 1.0. It did get a little ridiculous there at the end, though. Some of those cards in the last cycle were just kind of stupid.
And that was one of the things. I mean, when it's going back from such an open card pool, where if you were playing with an out-of-house card, basically your only negative was there was an out-of-house cost of +2 gold. Now, in some cases,
really?
That was a lot. Yeah, that's all it was.
Wow.
Unlike the banners as agendas now, you could, unless the card said House X only, you could play with just about any card. And it led to some pretty crazy combinations towards the end. but most people stuck with, you know, their base house and just threw in a few meta-defining cards here and there.
That is actually one of the things I like more about 2.0. I never really got to experience a 1.0 meta, so I don't know what it was like, but just playing out of the starter sets, it never seemed worth it to put anything besides your own house and neutral cards into a deck. When you're only getting like 4 or 5 gold off a plot, even a 3 cost out of faction character seems really expensive.
Yeah, and there definitely was that. It did get expensive, but sometimes having those characters from out of house could really make a big difference.
If they're broken, right?
Yeah, exactly.
You mean the Red Viper?
Well, but there's that. I mean, they did finally restrict him at the end of 1.0, right?
If they did, it was after I stopped playing. I made it through Gen Con last year.
You know,
did you play 1.0 at Gen Con last year?
I played 1.0 at Gen Con last year.
Oh, okay. How was that?
I got a win, a tie, and a loss, and then I dropped.
Okay.
I got an actual tie. I don't know how that happened.
I thought it was modified win or loss.
No, a win, a loss, and then a tie.
Power.
And I looked at it and was like, there's no way that I can make the cut with a tie.
I don't think I've ever heard of a tie occurring.
That's what almost everyone that was there said.
So huh. The tie just at the end of the 55 minutes, it's 7-7 or something like that.
Yeah, like I guess you finish out the round if it's an absolute.
There's gotta be tiebreakers though.
I don't know, maybe.
I don't know what 1.0 tiebreakers.
Paper, rock, scissors.
I don't. How many times is it gonna happen? I don't think it's really that important.
But I mean, it leads me, I guess, into like the idea of the banner agendas, and like being one of the main differences between 1.0 and 2.0 is that now, in order to play with another faction, you need to dedicate your agenda slot to doing that. Other than that, you're stuck with just the card pool of the base house. Now, with a limited card pool, I think it seems a little off to me. Like, for instance, we've got Lords of the Crossing coming up in the next chapter pack.
Yeah.
Now, with Lords of the Crossing, I mean, we're basically just going to be seeing single house decks running that. Now, with such a like, small card pool as it stands right now, it seems a little limiting to me. The fact that we don't get the opportunity to bring in other houses into our decks. I mean, I guess the way they should counteract that is a more robust neutral card setup.
And I think that they're getting there. You know,
Hedge Knights.
Yeah, they're coming out with the Hedge Knights and everything. Most houses have some sort of knight to complement it. And obviously Tyrell loves knights. I mean, they have a love affair with knights, but...
Yeah.
I agree. A few more neutral characters. Usable neutral characters would be nice.
Oh, Varys and Littlefinger are everywhere right now. I'm sure that they're going to continue doing that. And then, you know, once Lords of the Crossing really starts to get going, I'm sure that the Wildling armies are going to be everywhere too. So, I mean, 5 for 5 military power, and then can kneel your faction card to become a 7. That's just really good. So, I think once Wildlings, I mean, once they release more Wildlings, I think that could become the supplement to the Lords of the Crossing and these other agendas as well. So,
even so, I don't think they've really designed themselves into a corner with agendas either, because there are, but we've already seen agendas that affect how you can construct your deck and stuff like that. So it is possible that they may have an agenda that might give you some sort of ability and a disadvantage, and also have an ability to say, like, you may also play a banner agenda or something like that.
That'd be nice.
Yeah. And one thing, actually, bringing up Hedge Knight again, that I really like about Hedge Knight is that it's a low-cost neutral character.
Yeah.
Which is something that we've been lacking quite a bit right now. And 1.0, I'm sorry to keep bringing up 1.0, but, you know, that's where the bulk of my...
I love it when you do it.
I know, that's where the bulk of my experience came from. We had refugees. Now, refugees were...
I miss the refugees.
I think every 1.0 player misses the refugees, just from a ease of deck building standpoint. They were zero-cost bicons that basically... they were usually 2 strength, is that correct?
They were all 2 strength.
And if you didn't win dominance... You had to pay 1 gold to keep each one in play.
Jeez.
Anyone that you didn't pay for, you had to discard. And it was simple. It was straightforward. It was zero cost, like, flop characters. Like, who cares? You just throw them out there.
So you can have, like, a 7-card flop, like, every single time?
Yes. Free claim soak.
Yeah, they were essentially free claim soak. And one of the things that they had were... were they Veil refugees? Were those the neutral ones?
Yes, yeah.
And so, you know, you wanted to throw more low cost in there and put your curve down, throw in the neutral, you know, refugees as well, which after a while, I mean, they restricted the neutral. They restricted refugees. And what's one thing that I think we're lacking from 2.0, but I don't know if that's necessarily a bad thing. Because at the same time, you are forced to play your faction-specific chuds, essentially, your low-cost, like, under 3-cost characters. And, you know, with the addition of the Hedge Knight, is that pretty much just going to be an auto-include at this point?
I don't know if it'd be an auto-include. I think that it'd go in most decks. You know, I think you need to at least have the potential to have a knight in the deck in order to use it. I mean, I don't think Greyjoy is going to run it, just because they don't have a single knight in the entire faction.
Yeah, I was just about to point that out. I mean, if Hedge Knight A is nice, it's a 2-for-2. It is still a monocon, unless you have another knight. For example, out of Baratheon, the Bastard in Hiding is a 2-for-2 bicon, and you don't need any additional... So it's not like he'll be better than every faction-specific lobby.
Yeah, it makes sense. No. For some reason, I was thinking the Hedge Knight was the one-cost bicon.
I think we'll see him a lot in houses that don't banner, in decks that don't banner. Because if you banner, you've got more free weenies. If you don't, you know, your weenies are kind of limited.
That is true.
You see factions, and you know, you look at, like, people who build decks online, and... you know, for example, just to do a shout-out, the White Book with Aaron Glazer and Alex Kern, they do those two guys, one deck thing.
Yeah.
And, like, always the first comment on their little string, you know, it's like a conversational type thing.
Of course.
And the first thing, they're like, so 3 reducers from each house? I'm like, oh, of course. And that's exactly what we're going to do. How the hell wouldn't we do it?
So, yeah.
You know, that I think banner houses wouldn't really need it just because they have so much low-cost chud anyway that... they don't really need it, but a fealty deck. Oh, no, not a fealty, but a Lords of the Crossing deck. I could see it being pretty prominent.
Yeah, it makes sense. And so, I mean, I guess that leads me into the next part of this whole thing.
Wait, back up. Real quick. Is that really the established meta? Or are they joking around? Do you play all the reducers for both houses?
I mean, they do.
Okay.
I mean, you take everything you hear in the community with a grain of salt.
Yeah, everyone's got their own deck building strategies. All right,
just making
sure.
I mean, they're convinced that that's the best way to do it.
I would run 5 of them at least, if not all 6.
I don't know. I think it depends on the cost cover of your deck in general.
And it depends on what your deck is doing. Like recently, I built Martell Lanny, and I didn't include all 6. There was just no reason to.
Yeah.
I mean, like I had the Martell reducers in there, and that was it. I mean, I just have better options. You know, like I have Tyrion, I have Jaime, I have Widow's Wail, and Brothel Madam. So
why even bother including the other ones?
And it depends on what banner you're doing, too. Like, Stark, they already have so much low-cost stuff in there. Like,
yeah,
Bran, Arya, Sansa,
yeah.
Tumblestone Knight, you don't really need to do the reducers. But if you're doing, like, if you're banning Lyon and you want Tyrion and Jaime, that's a 5 and a 6.
Yeah, that's
maybe
true.
Maybe include the reducers to kind of even out that cost curve of your banner.
That makes sense. Yeah, and I guess leading into the bannering aspect of it, one thing that I really like and don't like is that the banners, as they've introduced them in each of these houses, they bring pretty much an established archetype. You banner to Barrow. What are you bringing? You're bringing
Melisandre.
Yeah, you're bringing the Mel suite. I mean, that's there. With Tyrell, strength pumping. And now, I mean, it's giving a lot of decks the ability for Power Rush.
Yeah.
With Lady Sansa's Rose, with... the cheap knights and
Knight of Flowers.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, and if you want Randall for renown.
Yeah, and another lady. I mean, you know, Marjorie.
And right Marjorie is just a great cost, 3-cost character, regardless of what deck.
Not to include Marjorie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think she's going to be in every Tyrell deck and Banner of the Rose deck until the end of the game. At least one of. We can't predict what's coming out.
Yeah, why not? She's a strength pumper, and it makes people reconsider and challenge. You have to recalculate in challenges
every time she's out.
If
you can fuck with challenge math...
yeah.
You're doing something right.
Exactly. The more considerations you can pile on them.
And that's what Naval was in 1.0, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
I hear everyone loves Naval, so.
Naval was a lot of fun, but I don't know if they're going to bring that. Are they going to bring it back?
Honestly, I hope not. I didn't like Naval.
The Kennel Master is Naval.
Yeah, I mean, the Kennel Master is kind of like light. So for anyone listening who's not familiar with Naval, Naval was an attachment to an icon. It was basically a little ship on an icon. And what it would allow you to do is, as a challenge action, you could, if that character had a Naval icon on the icon of the challenge type that was being initiated, you could bring them in kneeling as participating in the challenge.
Mm.
And It led to some shenanigans. It definitely led to some things that was, if you want to talk about additional concerns and challenges, like, you know, that was definitely there.
Well, from what I hear, like, when I hear people talk about 1.0, it just sounds exhausting. All the things you had to consider, like, with that, and then you had, like, shadows, and then you had, you know, it just sounded like, how do you remember every single card? Because, you know, right now, the biggest strength of such a small card pool is, you know, when a person does a challenge, you can look at their banner, you can look at their house and be like, okay, what are their options? What can they do? And then you say, okay, they have one gold, so they can do this, and then you adjust based on those. How are you going to do that once there's like 1,000 cards in the game?
You just have to be good.
Remember every single card in the card pool and how it could affect you.
Be obsessed with the game.
Yeah, I mean, that's, well, and I mean, that's what, something I really love about 2.0 is that it's bringing a whole new group of players to the game. I mean, our Cincinnati meta grew from like 6 people to 30 people, just from the release of 2.0. And it has been so much fun, like, having this many people playing with us.
Well,
and
you got me, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we got you into it.
It's pretty amazing.
And so we look at Tyrell, we look at what banner they can bring in, and then, so here are my questions. What does a Targ banner bring into it? I mean, low curve, like, high military characters, Jorah.
You know, there's a reason you don't see a lot of Banner of the Dragons, and it's because there isn't a defined thing.
So what do you think they're going to work with? Is it going to be that low cost, high strength mono icon?
Once the Crone comes out, I know what I'm going to bring in my Banner of the Dragon.
That's fair.
That thing is ridiculous. Yeah.
I mean, the reason I don't think you see a lot of Targaryen banners right now is that all of their really good cards pertain to a very specific set of keywords.
Sure.
Like, the dragons Stormborn. Are really cheap bicons and monocons and such, but they are also really only there to make Stormborn Daenerys better. And you have Dracarys, so if you bought the dragons in with, you could have 3 Dracarys in your deck, but then you just use like 12 slots just so you could use Dracarys.
Yeah, Dracarys is loyal.
Oh, sorry. What about Fire and Storm? Is that loyal?
Fire and Blood.
I think so. They have 3 events. One of them is non-loyal. I forget which one. It's either Waking the Dragon.
I think Waking the Dragon is non-loyal.
So I think Fire and Blood is also loyal.
Like, I don't know about other people, but a lot of times when I'm bannering, I like to run at least one of the events because they usually have really good non-loyal events. So if Targaryen's only good events are loyal, then that might be another reason why you don't see a lot of play.
Sure.
Like, I mean, Lannister, you get treachery, right?
And then, I mean, the Tickler, 2-cost unique Lannister character, I mean, that makes it even more beautiful that you can run treachery.
I mean, you're talking about the Tickler when the Hound is out there?
Yeah, that's true. But yeah, I'm talking about the Tickler. I like the Tickler. I like being tickled.
You like Targ
banner
people?
Right now? I mean, it's 2 copies of each dragon, 3 copies of a Dothraki just because it's a cheap thing, and 3 copies of Jorah.
Yeah.
Maybe an Illyrio if you like stand. I don't know.
Yeah, true.
I mean, 5 cost and then 2 more. I mean, if you're Lannister. But then, I guess, you do the other way around.
But you made a really good point with the Crone coming out, and the Crone not being loyal. I mean, with how powerful Intrigue is right now, having the Crone out there...
It basically makes every Intrigue challenge heads on spikes.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much, without the power gain.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, the power gain, I think, is the least important part of heads on spikes.
And then, on the flip side of that, then we come to houses like Martell that have an established thing that they can do. I mean, Icon Removal, Confinement, Maester Colette, Nymeria. Nymeria alone makes Martell like a worthwhile banner. But, I mean, at the same time, with all of that, I mean, you are bringing in cost. And that's the thing. Nymeria is I guess it doesn't really matter because Lanny. So.
Well, yeah, I mean, Lanny doesn't care, but other factions actually might care.
Yeah, exactly.
Some people play more than just Lannister.
That's true. I don't know those people.
This community doesn't realize
play more
that.
Than just Night's Watch, dude.
I have thought about playing something other than Night's Watch this week, so.
So we were having a discussion earlier in the week and was talking about bannering to Stark. Now, it brings in Bran, it brings in Arya, it brings in Sansa.
Yep.
And those are great in and of themselves. Now, with, like, you know, the Lanny Stark deck that pretty much is just cancellation after cancellation, there's aspects of that work well. You have a cheap stealth character who's a bicon under certain circumstances, and you have Sansa for power grab. Seems all in all just like a great banner in there.
I love it.
But at the same time, now for Night's Watch and for Night's Watch and for Lanny, that's great. Maybe even Tyrell in some regards. Yeah, you know, actually Tyrell's
gonna love it.
Yeah, because it's two other ladies, you know.
Two other ladies, another knight.
Yeah, exactly. Tumblestone in there as well. But then, you know, you try bannering, let's say, Barra to Stark, which I tried recently. And it's terrible.
No. Baratheon is not terrible regardless of what banner it has.
I don't know. I think it dilutes it a little bit. But, so, I mean...
it's not as great as just all the great Baratheon cards.
You had a Baratheon deck and you bannered Stark into it?
Yeah, I just wanted to see what would happen with it. It was a pretty terrible deck. I can say that I didn't enjoy it very much.
I don't know, what was your endgame
in that?
Nobody
enjoys playing Baratheon.
That was the problem. I didn't have an endgame.
That is the problem.
Yeah, there's no real power grab.
There's no synergy between the two.
Yeah, it's kind of like Stark Martell. You know, it sounds great on paper. Oh, more ways to get my challenges through. And then in execution, that's great. I mean, I was trying a Stark Martell last week, and I had board presence by turn three almost every single one of those games. I would end up getting beaten by either one Balin, you know, Balin's power grab was just too much for me, or a single copy of Dany and a Chud, and things like that. And there was no cohesion to the two, even though on paper it sounded great.
I think Martell banner in general seems very appealing. Like, I've tried a Greyjoy banner Martell, because I'm like, I stealth past more people if I can take icons off of them and stuff like that. It definitely helps you get existing challenges through. The problem I've always had with banners is it does dilute your original strategy. So it's great that I can stealth more, but it's not really helping me to do what I was originally trying to do. Like, it doesn't, with Greyjoy, it doesn't kill more people for me, or Stark, it doesn't kill more people for me. Baratheon, it doesn't bow more people for me.
That makes sense, yeah, and getting the challenges through. But, I mean, with Greyjoy, having Balin as the sixth cost is...
So, I guess the next question
not
would
a bad
be
thing.
Is, like... You done?
Oh, yeah, I'm done. Go ahead. Please, after you.
When you banner, I guess the question is, you know, I guess the two reasons to banner is to strengthen a strength or to, you know, cover up a weakness.
Sure.
And I don't think Stark really does anything for Baratheon because they have no weaknesses.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Well, Mickey, you mentioned Targ, but Night's Watch? What do you banner Night's Watch into? Is there anything? What's the advantage?
I played against a Baron Night's Watch deck the other day. That was not terrible.
That deck is...
It wasn't terrible. I mean, it's just, it's Neil, and, you know, you have Painted Table, Iron Throne, the wall out there.
Night's Watch.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it.
You banner Night's Watch for the wall, and then just use it to build some strong defensive deck out of some other faction.
I mean, you get the
Which
wall.
Is all Night's Watch is good for, looking at you, Joe.
It's not even the best faction to be defensive with, though.
Yeah.
Wait, I mean, Barra or Night's Watch?
Night's Watch.
Yeah, it really, unfortunately at this point...
I think that was a counterbalance they did intentionally. Is like, oh, we're going to make a deck that does nothing but defend, and we're going to give them 10, you know, one-icon characters. It's like, oh, I appreciate that, FFG. You really did me right there. So.
Yeah, and you know, along with Brandon's Gift, when there's only, what, one builder in the game right now? Is that right? There's only one? The veteran builder is the only builder in the game.
I actually just remembered something about Martell. There is one thing about the Martell banner that I have really come to appreciate, and it's the new card, like Indoran's name or whatever has the banner, the little flag on it.
Yeah, the one that gives you a gold.
No one ever sees it coming. Like, you're like, he's about to do a 10 strength military.
But he
doesn't
no
have
gold.
Any money, though. I'll just chump block it, and then, like, as an action, gain 3 money, put to the sword, your best guy.
Yeah.
Well,
the week after that card came out, I got hit by that too, and, you know, I felt.
Yeah, I mean, that just goes back
surprised.
To what I was saying. Like, right now, you really need to look at what their faction is and their banner and say, what can they do to me? And if they're doing a 10 military challenge and they're Martell, they probably have Indoran's name in their hand. So, account for it. You know, don't just, like, assume that what's on the board is all they have. They have a hand. And I think that's what you really have to look for these banners.
You have to. That's playing into someone's hand too. I could just be making a strength 10 challenge because I want you to throw three chumps in front of it, and then you can't make any challenges. You can't always make the best play, assuming your opponent has exactly what they need to beat you.
Well, you have to evaluate the skill level of your opponent.
But yeah, I mean, and there's been times where I've kept two gold aside, even though I don't have put to the sword in hand, and then make those challenges just to.
That's what I mean.
Yeah, I know. That's exactly. I agree with you completely. And so there's no way to really account for it.
Well,
sometimes
I'd rather overcommit than walk into a trap. I'd rather, like, you know, if someone's attacking with a dragon standing in one gold.
Is the trap, Joe. You just walked into the trap by trying to avoid the trap.
Well, no, but if you can wait another turn, right? They attack with Daenerys with a dragon standing or something like that, or they attack with somebody with a dragon standing.
Yeah, you're gonna think.
And you're like, oh, should I defend with my Nymeria, or I could just let this go unopposed and then wait until next round when he doesn't have a gold.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you just have to. The drag's gonna happen. It's gonna happen to somebody sooner or later. You just have to be prepared for it to happen and just move on.
Oh yeah, but so the important thing is to not throw Nymeria into it.
Well, it depends on what she's holding. You know, if she's got Dawn in hand, why not?
I mean, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything.
I mean, if she has more than four strength, yeah, you don't really worry about it.
Yeah,
but if she has four strength, you worry about it.
Very much so.
Just put them in the challenge, and if they get dracked, that's one less drack you have to deal with later on.
And then they rebuild.
Yeah. Now people are starting. I saw a couple people running rebuilding along with building orders to get another crown in. Last week I got hit by crown twice in a single game. And let me tell you, that was terrible. And the other part of it was they were also getting their dracks back. Now, I mean, but then thankfully Targ doesn't have much in the way of card draw, except for Dany. And so,
but
you
Dany
know.
Dany is fantastic card draw.
Dany is fantastic. But, you know, the beauty of Targ is that they're able to clear a board state pretty quickly and can afford to run Counting Coppers, you know, in their plots right now. And so that's five cards right there. And so it was very odd to see Crown of Gold twice in a single game. I was very close to scooping at that point. I'm like, well, what's the... I won the game, but the fact of the matter is my morale was crushed losing two of my big guys.
Targaryen's annoying.
I like what they're doing with Targ. I mean, it's not really any different than one, but...
I'm a long-time 1.0 Targ player, so I appreciate what they're doing
with
Targ.
Well, what they're doing is they're basically giving them a lot of great cards, but then they're not giving them much draw, so that they rely heavily on variance.
Yeah,
they kind of get screwed over by variance.
See, actually... wait, Targ, you're saying? Gets screwed over by variance? I think that's where I disagree with you. One of the aspects of Targ that I really like is that their board state is pretty much defined by if they have Dany or Drogo out. If you have Dany out, you have, you know, your Drac options, you have the ability for card draw, you have the ability for playing Tears of Lys, things like that. Whereas if you have Drogo out, then you've got your put to the swords, then you've got, you know, your military challenges coming through, and two military challenges every turn, essentially. And I think that the way that they combat variance is by having such a varied board state that it doesn't matter what they draw into as long as they draw into one of them. Yeah. So the first thing that's going to combat variance, in my opinion, in a Targ deck is summons.
Yeah, summons is a must-have in Targaryen.
Yeah. And so the minute you have summons, you either get one of the characters you need or a dupe for a character you might need, and you've completely gone through that. And I think that's why, even without a lot of in-house card draw, Targaryen is actually a very, very popular and very strong house because they can control the board early with things like Drac, with things like Plaza of Punishment, with the military challenges coming one after another, with Tears of Lys on top of that, so that they can also afford that burst draw that comes from counting coppers, you know, like mid to late game.
Yeah, with so much kill coming out of Targ, whether it be Tears or Put to the Sword or Drac or Plaza, I mean, they've just got board control. Any challenge they throw at you, they can kill somebody off it.
And that's why, you know, I was having a conversation with somebody, I don't really know who, but it was on some Facebook thread. We were talking about Targaryen, and I said that I didn't really like that summons basically takes out, like, 90% of the variance in a deck that relies on one character. Like, you know, in any other game, you know, if you're theoretically building a deck for some other game and you need one card or maybe two cards out of the 60 card deck to really do anything at all, that's typically a bad deck. I mean, if you're building a deck where you need one, like, you have one card that you just suck without, that's a bad deck.
Name any deck or house right now that doesn't rely on one or two cards.
That's the problem.
Yeah.
And that's why summons and building orders are, like, basically ripping the very inside of the game.
Sure.
And
which I don't think is a bad thing. I think it's kind of necessary to give everyone access. Because right now, and so Joe, you and I were talking to Luke from the White Book earlier this week, and we were talking about variants. And my question was, so how do you combat variants? Do you have more deck search effects, much like, you know, summons or building orders? And Luke's response was really straightforward, burst draw. And so I started looking at the houses that have burst draw effects, like Tyrell, for instance, mm-hmm. and Baratheon with the Red Keep. And, you know, with those two decks, they don't rely necessarily on board they don't necessarily rely on their card draw. They have ways to get to their card draw. With Baratheon, you have board control effects. With Tyrell, you have just insane power grab now. And so, and strength pumping, so you can get your challenges through. And so they can wait out until they actually will need the Mander or the Red Keep, respectively. But then all of the other houses that don't have these burst draw, let's take Targaryen, for instance, as we just brought up before. What they have is just superior board control and the need just for one character, one of those two characters to come in to be successful. So summons actually helps houses right now that don't have that burst draw that is necessary to combat variants.
Yeah, but they don't have burst draw because their other cards are so powerful. It should have a variance built in. That's why I think summons could become... It eliminates variance when a deck has all these great cards
sure.
that, you know, other factions don't get... Well, seven factions get great cards.
I mean, you got to keep it balanced, though. I mean, they give the burst draw to the houses that need it. Can you imagine, like, how bad Targ would be if you gave him a card that said...
Draw three cards?
Yeah, draw three cards every turn.
Yeah, it's called counting coppers.
Yeah, I mean, seriously,
oh, every turn
out of Targ?
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And that's the thing. I mean, and I think it's one of the reasons why Night's Watch and Stark are generally just not as strong of houses right now. Night's Watch, your only real draw effects are Messenger Raven and Sam.
And Will.
Right? What's that?
And Will.
And Will, that's right. Will does have insight. But it doesn't lend easily because they're characters that can be killed. Whereas most of the other draw effects are going to be a character that you're going to focus on keeping alive, Danny, a location that, you know, will help you with your draw, Mander, Red Keep, and I always forget which one's which. Casterly Rock is the...
Lannisport,
thank you. Mm. And so, you know, you have things that are not... I mean, not many people are running Put to the Torch right now, so they're generally safer. And so with Stark, the problem with Gates of Winterfell is that it is completely circumstantial, and it really makes you play fealty. Because if it's not a Stark card, it just goes right back there.
And now they know what's on top of your deck.
Exactly, exactly.
Well, I never saw that card used much in 1.0. I mean, it was there, but it rarely saw play,
sure.
if ever.
But, and that's the problem, I think, with Stark right now. I think Stark, yes, can maintain board control, but and you would look at him, you're like, oh, this is such a low curve. But then you have things like Ice, you have things like Put to the Sword, you have all these things that cost money for them to get their kill effects
yeah.
through. Even Winter is coming, you know, if you're not playing Stark Fealty, like, that's an extra gold that you need. So the problem with Stark is, do you really have time, or do you really have the ability to play a Counting Coppers? And so, I mean, I haven't seen many Stark players, if any, actually play Counting Coppers at all. What they're doing is, they're playing things that are kill effects, high initiative, you know, two claim plots and things along those lines. And I think the only thing, in my opinion, keeping Stark from being one of the top houses, minus obviously Wolves to the North, which we're going to be seeing soon, is variance, is the effects of variance on their lack of card draw. Same with Night's Watch. I think one thing that keeps Night's Watch from being consistent right now is, I mean, it's impossible to get into the right set of characters that you're going to need in order to stop all the big houses. Because you need Benjen, pretty much, to stop Greyjoy. Otherwise, all of your characters are going to get sniped off. You're going to need the Wall to stop Drak in some cases, even though it doesn't really matter because you know, they're all weenies anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I don't run anything higher than 5 yeah. strength.
Yeah, and that's the problem. I think that they fall short to some of the stronger houses because they're not able to field. I mean, Night's Watch case, it's because, in my opinion, they're just not a strong house yet. But in the case of Stark, it's that they can't get to the cards they need as quickly as possible and have a big enough hand to have that utility in order not only to kill their opponent's board, but also power grab. You know, Rob is not enough power grab, in my opinion. Eddard, and this is once again my opinion, I think it's too expensive for what he does.
Yeah,
he's great except for the stealth.
Yeah.
If it's card text that cannot be stealthed, then...
Well, one thing
for a 7 cost, no. Even non-loyal for a reason, because you're never going to run 3 copies of him.
Yeah.
One thing I have noticed about Eddard is that as soon as he hits the board, he's like Tears of Lyss Central.
Oh, yeah.
People just murder the hell out of that guy. It's kind of sad, but it's so Nedly. Murdering Ned Stark is
so
Nedly.
I think put to the sorting, Eddard Stark would be a lot more Nedly.
Killing him in general is pretty Nedly.
Yeah, yeah.
He's, oh, God. But, I mean, he's even 5 strength, so standing Dany and Dracarys kills him, too.
Exactly.
So, shit.
So at what point, how do we, so now, Joe, you're against summons and building orders. What do you feel about, how should they combat this then? I mean, do you add more in, I mean, Dany, feel free to add more.
Naval superiority.
It doesn't win games. do you add more in-house card draw, or do you add more plot-based card draw? Or neutral card draw, so that every house has access to it.
I think there needs to be more neutral card draw, honestly.
See, No neutral card draw.
I agree with that, because that's a slippery slope right there, because then what you have is another auto-include. Well, it's a card, I don't care. I mean, they have one already, Littlefinger. And most people run Littlefinger.
I mean, until Serio came out, I think Serio took a lot of Littlefinger spots.
that is a good point.
I hate Hand's Judgment. Any auto-include, neutral auto-include is just... And I hate it.
Yeah. I mean, Hand's Judgment's great. I don't build a deck without it, honestly. At least 2 of them. So, I could see that point, yeah. I mean, auto-include neutrals aren't great for the game.
So then the balance then comes between how do you, in a timely fashion, introduce or release card draw that's faction-specific that just doesn't break the game in that house's favor.
I think tutors are important. I mean... I don't
know. Like deck searches, things like that, yeah.
Yeah, like if there was they're coming out with a new card, and I don't even know what chapter pack it's from, but it's called Wolf Dreams, and it's just a 0 cost.
Yep.
Look for a wolf, a dire wolf, and just I think it's in hand. So just look for a wolf, put it in hand. I think they could print something like that where it's like look for a lord, put it in hand. I mean. I think that would
no.
That would decrease variance without giving you look at the top 10 and just
a
do
lord?
Whatever you want.
Tywin.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. How are you for tutors but against summons? A summons is just a worse tutor.
Because summons is on-demand tutoring. A tutor in your deck, you have to actually
so you have to draw into it first.
Like
so it's
people,
not.
I don't think damage the game at all. Because it's essentially an extra copy of the card you want.
And you have to win the challenge by 5 strength,
exactly.
You know.
To find a way to fit it in your deck.
Yeah,
well,
exactly.
So I think,
okay, so I see the point.
Not bad at all.
Okay.
I mean, if there are a card like pay 2 gold, search your deck for a lord and put it into your hand.
Yeah.
First of all, they know it's in your hand.
Sure.
You probably can't play it that turn unless mm-hmm. you just play a huge gold plot. Or you have Tywin already or something like that. But I mean, it's forecastable. You can see it, but it's not like, oh, I'm gonna play summons on my first turn because the plot deck is interesting because it's on demand. You can troll it.
Yeah, that's true.
You always have access to it. I think reducing variance is all about making you you still have to draw your cards, but give them more cards to draw.
Mm-hmm.
With Lannister, you have 3 cards that you want: Tywin,
and Tyrion.
Yeah, I suppose. But Tywin is the main
period.
Yeah.
You definitely want
Tywin. Tywin plus seals wins games. I mean,
so, I mean, if you had Tywin, ward search, you doubled the number of cards that can get you Tywin,
sure.
But you didn't give it to him on demand.
Yeah. That's fair. Yes, I mean, circumstantial card draw then. You know, things like win a challenge by 5 strength or... You know, sorry, go ahead.
Like, one of the big problems I think with 2.0 right now is, particularly for the plots, is just the available selection of things to go through. Like, if you look at the plot decks from the base set, it is very clear that about 10 plots float to the top and the other, like, 20 sink to the bottom.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, there are standard setups, and then when you deviate from those setups, you know, it's for a specific reason that your deck is built around.
Yeah.
But other than that, I mean, Noble Cause, Calling the Banners, Calm Over Westeros, Confiscation.
Marched.
Yeah, I mean, I think all of us, anyone who plays the game, who's played the game a lot, we know them all. And so it, and at that point, I mean, that's just going to be, you know, card pool coming out that changes what are the necessary plots.
Yeah, what I meant was, once you get more selection, you could still play summons, but it means you'd be giving up another equally awesome plot. Right now, you're not really giving up anything to play summons.
Yeah,
I guess, and that is something I think we all need to keep in mind when playing this game, is that, you know, we are in a limited card pool right now. We're only a couple chapter packs in, and we don't have that much, and so, you know, it's possible to overanalyze at this point. But then the next one comes out, I mean, look at the next plot that's coming out for Snow of Winter.
I think it's too early to be putting that out.
I agree.
I think it's going to hand control decks the card they need to win games.
I agree with you completely, because I mean, if you look at a standard board state, a lot of the times, I mean, unless it's like right after a Wildfire Assault turn, there's just chuds everywhere. And, you know, I mean, the reserve value on it, you know, depending on, like, what if it's a turn where I play, like, you know, Feast for Crows, right? Is that the 6-2-1 that...
6-1-1.
6-1-1, thank you.
6-1-1-4.
And, you know, that has a reserve value of 4. So I play it on that turn. I'm like, oh, great. All my guys come back to hand. Now I have to discard six of
cards.
Them. Yeah. I mean, that's... Yeah, Mike, I agree with you completely. It is way too early to have it. But at the same time, it's going to help right now, in my opinion. I think aggro is winning in any way.
Go on a Night's Watch rant?
Yeah, go on a Night's Watch rant.
I don't understand why they made Night's Watch a faction if they're just going to completely fuck them over in every single chapter pack. I don't get it. They're like, you know, we're going to add this faction that is based around, you know, defending the wall. And obviously there's other things you can do,
yeah.
Right? I mean, Jon Snow is okay.
Yeah.
Eventually, maybe.
Eventually, yeah.
And then, obviously, you have Jeremy Hammond is a guy. He made that Night's Watch Kraken deck that's basically a Greyjoy deck with Yorn in it.
Yep, pretty much. Which works really well, actually.
It works amazingly well.
It's an anti-meta deck.
Yeah, it doesn't have the wall, it doesn't have Jon, so mm-hmm. It's completely... You know, it's a Night's Watch deck, but doesn't really operate like a Night's Watch deck.
Yeah.
So that kind of stuff, yeah, that's not included in this rant.
What about Night's Watch Lion with Brothel Madam?
What about it?
I don't know. I think it's more ways of stalling, I think, which is what Night's Watch is looking for.
When I'm playing Night's Watch, I'm not looking to stall. Stall is how you lose.
You don't think stalling or turtling is the way to win Night's Watch?
No. It's about speed. You need to win fast before they draw 40 cards into their deck.
Really?
Yeah.
You don't want to just get the wall and just flood the board with guys and just chump block everything?
That's called speeding to the victory. Two powerful.
Yeah, that's
wall
why I mean, that's turtling.
Every turn.
Yeah. I would call that turtling.
I agree.
Yeah, because you're not actively going after your opponent. You could care less.
You can if you want to.
But then that increases the possibility that an unopposed challenge gets through. And so you've got the wall and Iron Throne out there. That's three power per turn.
Every turn, know? Max. It's going to be a five round game.
And then maybe throw a challenge out there. But I mean, I don't know. I would say that the Night's Watch deck is definitely about turtling.
Oh, I don't disagree. I'm saying that it shouldn't be a slow deck.
Sure.
It shouldn't stall for 8 turns. That's not how you're going to win with Night's Watch.
I think that's exactly how you win.
I think that's
I disagree. With Night's Watch, if I have not wrapped up the win by like turn 5 or 6, I'm in trouble. Because by then they're going to have Tywin, Tyrion, Jaime, Cersei, you know, Randall, Knight of Flowers, and then they're just going to run out.
Wildfire Assault.
Well, but my point stands.
Yeah.
I mean, if
who
they
wants
get
Wildfire out of Night's Watch? That
I
seems
do.
You don't want them to have a better board state than you. You want to have your basic characters in.
Do you know
in
how amazing it feels to murder Benjen to win the game?
Yeah, especially if you have another Benjen in hand.
Yeah.
Like, that's awesome.
It's on-demand power.
Yeah.
It's basically a two-power plot, in my opinion.
Yeah, you know, honestly, it would be nice to Wildfire Benjen and get stuff off Joffrey, too. Like, 5 power grab from all the lords and ladies dying.
There aren't that many. I mean, we're not looking. This is there's not that many lords and ladies that are going to be dying.
No,
for Joffrey.
Not in the Banner of the Line.
Yeah, though, unless it's going to get me the game. Like,
yeah, you're not
going to see my point.
Unless that gets you the win.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I don't know. I hear this all the time, like, oh, Night's Watch is all about stalling, and they go to time. It's like, those people are not playing Night's Watch the way it should be played.
But I feel what you're saying is the same thing. I feel like that is stalling. It's, you know, you're just waiting there until your board state's good enough so you can block all the challenges.
No, it's called defending. It's not stalling. Stalling okay. is what Martell does.
Well, Martell stalls until round 4 or 5 and then tries to just power grab 6-7 power all at once.
That's true. Yeah.
But how often does that work?
I mean, when it works.
Yeah, when it works, it's pretty impressive.
It's kind of, I think it's a Shaggot type of thing.
So, yeah, I mean, that's, I mean, that's, I see your point, you know, with that. And I don't know, I think that's just kind of the niche that Night's Watch is just going to fall into for a little while. Is it stalling? Is it defending? You know,
yeah,
tomato,
but,
tomato.
But, you know, back to what I was saying about my rant, you know, they really just, yeah, they keep going and they keep releasing cards that are going to make it harder and harder to defend the wall, and then they come out with First Snow of Winter, it's like, oh, now I have to play 5s, 6s, and 7s out of my
sure.
Night's Watch deck, and that's just going to be a pain.
Yeah.
And it's just going to make it harder to defend the wall, and they keep releasing silver bullets to the wall, basically, when they didn't even need to. Because it's already weak.
I think we're going to see a lot of differences in that with the upcoming chapter packs, like Alistair Thorne coming up. We don't even know what's in Wolves of the North yet. And, you know, North, it kind of goes with the wall. Maybe there's good stuff for the wall.
I hope so.
Yeah, that would be.
As long as we're on the subject, I have a question for you, Joe, from Cincinnati.
Yeah.
What is a Jamaican's favorite Game of Thrones character?
Jamaican's?
Yeah.
You mean Shamar?
What?
Who's
what is a Jamaican's favorite Game of Thrones character?
Oh. I don't know, Dan.
Aemon Targaryen.
Wow. Oh, Danny.
Oh.
That's my brother, and he's a dumbass.
Anyways. Yeah, so, you know, I think we've covered some good stuff here today. One thing else I'd like to bring up is in our local meta right now, we're in the middle of league play, which I don't really hear about a lot of other metas doing, and I'm wondering, and I would love if people would, if they do run leagues, tell me how they do them. The way that we do ours here is an achievement system where, you know, we have a list of things that you have to fulfill. And I can't remember some of them off the top of my head. Does anyone remember any?
Lightning strikes, win with the Night's Watch deck.
Lightning strikes twice, win with the Night's Watch deck twice.
You know,
I can go down like most of the list. We have.
You know, these guys just do this shit just to annoy me. I think.
I know. I remember most of the names too. There's the Mountain That Rides Your Mom. Win a game by 10 power or more.
That's right. That's right. Power resides where men believe it resides, and that one is win a challenge by 20 strength or more.
Yeah, a lot of them get really specific but thematic with the show. Like,
what was the one where you put the sword Eddard?
Spoilers. And then there's I Will Be Your Champion, have Tyrion and the Red Viper out at the same time.
Yeah. And so basically we just have this list of all of these achievements, and they have point totals ascribed to them. And so after the end of 5 weeks, what we end up doing is we convert those points into raffle tickets. And we use those raffle tickets to raffle off prizes from some of our support kits. And it's a great way to get people interested more in the game and doing alternate builds. For instance, the Lightning Strikes and Lightning Strikes Twice, people are actually playing Night's Watch now, myself included.
Fakers, man.
And, oh, sorry, go ahead, Mike.
It's also a good way to have newer players or players that aren't as good, you know, get some prize support. You know, if you just ran it just like a tournament, and, you know, over 5 weeks, the top couple of players would just be winning everything all the time.
What about the Sansa Award, right?
Do we even have a Sansa prize?
We've always done a Sansa Award for every single one of them. For the last SC that we had, where we had 36 people here, we had the Sansa prize was a Tyrell playmat, one of the ones that you buy from FFG, the TO's deck box, and there was something else in there. Oh, yeah. We threw a
1.0 promo.
Yeah, from Worlds. It was the Street of Silk 1.0 promo. Well, I mean, we had it laying around. Why not? And it's a Santa prize. It can't be all good. But
and for those who don't know, Santa prize is for the person who places last in a tournament.
But I mean, and I see Mike's point. It gives prize support to people, especially new people, new players to the game, who just are still getting into the hang of deck building and playing and things like that. It gives them an opportunity to get the prizes. And it's fun. You know, we all get together. We're all playing weird decks. We have one of them. What was it called? The Deadly Viper Assassination Squad. Win an intrigue challenge with three or more Sand Snake characters. And so, you know,
I remember back in 1.0, I made one of the league achievements, win with the white book, and Rob Barger actually built a white book deck and somehow won with it.
Which, I wasn't there for that one, so I still don't believe it.
It happened.
But, yeah, and so, you know, we'd love to hear about some things that you guys do in your meta to drum up interest, to keep interest going, besides, you know, running the SCs and the Seasons kits. Anything you want to leave with us and, you know, comment, let us know. I think that's going to be about all the time we have for this podcast. I had a lot of fun doing this. This is great. I can't wait for a couple weeks from now when we do the second one.
Yeah.
Yeah, if anybody has any suggestions for things they'd like to hear us discuss, feel free to let us know.
I got nothing else to say.
All right, have
this
a good
what
night.
Happens when you point at people to talk.
All right, take care, everybody.